interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism. To bring you behind the woodshed, this is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 580. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. And we're going to do a PSA real quick, because there's some people out there that may not want you to do that. The Internet Archive and the Wayback Machine is under a DDoS attack, and we need to really kind of look around and listen to see if people are doing that to keep us off the waves here. And in the archive, the Internet Archive is a nonprofit research library that's home of millions of historical documents, preserved websites, and media content. It's currently in its third day of warding off an intermittent DDoS, distributed denial of service, a cyber attack. According to the library staff, the collections are safe, though service remains inconsistent. Access to the Internet Archive Wayback Machine, which preserves the history of more than 866 billion web pages, has also been impacted. So they must have found out that the archive was created for Behind the Woodshed episodes is there, and somebody doesn't want you to hear them. So keep track of it and see what we can do about maybe warding them off. You have a right to hear it, even if they don't like it. Or if you're made to have a small brain, you might have a little bit of trouble with that. Brain damage from smartphones. And this is a statement from Cryptogon.com. It's a video you can read. And this isn't news to any of y'all at this point, but maybe it could be a handy, if you're trying to help someone deal with this, a warning someone with young children about the dangers of social media. But what I find interesting is this video explains that it's not merely a behavioral condition using a smartphone. It's actually a physical effect that makes your brain smaller. So I'd ask you to look at that and qualify that information, look through. Again, not fear-mongering, just be aware. And again, if you know the cells growing up small, they're growing bigger, they're getting multiplying, and they get to an adulthood, and they get stunted, or they get epigenetically altered, that could be a real problem too. And they may claim that it's the standards that are made by the federal government are a balance between making a product and selling it at a profit and not. And that's why they have that safe and effective balance that they keep doing. It doesn't mean it's safe and effective. It's more like cleaner and safer, not clean and safe. And so this is what we have to be careful of. They may not agree with you, that you agree, that you think there's a problem, but that's really not up to them to decide. So it might be a good thing when you find out maybe your brains are getting a little bit smaller, not just because of social interaction, but there's a physical imposition that's been placed on the growth. It might be a good idea that New York is proposing to ban SMART phones for dumb phones. I say that and I pause. Do you recognize how they flipped this whole thing around? It's really not too intelligent to have an SMART phone. And yet you go to the one that isn't quite the damaging unit, and it's called a dumb phone. New York plans to ban smartphones in schools, allowing basic phones only kids, and some parents are unlikely to be pleased. Now, this is not the story about that either, so listen carefully what they're actually doing. Under the cover of the warm and fuzzy, helping the children and the women and the indigenous, but here are the kids, those little goats that you send down to the public education system, indoctrination system. The issue of whether smartphones should be banned in school has long been a controversial one. Long, folks. This is a long-term controversy now. We've only seen these phones in the last decade or so, of any kind of consequence. But long-term, in New York, it appears the kids, those little goats, will soon only be able to use dumb phones rather than those with a full internet access while on school property. New York Governor Kathy Hochul said that she intends to launch the bill later this year and take it up in New York's next legislative session, which starts January 2025. One of the main reasons why parents have objected to schools banning kids who are carrying smartphones in the U.S., phones are banned across all schools in England, has been the need to reach their children at all times for both emergencies and routine scheduling issues. Quote, parents are very anxious about mass shootings in schools, she said. Parents want to be able to have some form of connection in an emergency situation. Potchell's bill appears to address this problem by allowing children to carry phones that lack internet access but can send texts and make calls, which sounds like a feature for dumb phones. Potchell is also pushing the Stop Addictive Feeds Exploitation, or SAFE, for Kids Act. So here he comes. Here comes the future they want. And this is where it starts to use the issue relative to the kids, your sons and daughters, in the school that you put them in. And they then go on the step, next step, and this next step beyond. It would require social media platforms to provide minors with a default chronological feed composed of accounts they follow rather than one suggested by an algorithm. So I thought that, I prefer my ex-Twitter feed to be in chronological order. Does that mean I'm being exploited? Another of the governor's bills, the New York Child Data Protection Act, restricts the collection of children's personal data by online sites that have knowledge of a user's age. And I hope you're hearing and listening to all what we're saying and what you've been finding and listening carefully, because that's there right there on that is the problem. The problem is these bills aren't about saving the children from harm. The kids, your little goats, are used as a stalking horse to increase surveillance. When the companies here, as it goes through, are required to identify everyone through a government or real ID before you have a right to acquire information, express yourself or associate, be free from forced association with the government, or exercise your right of press, violations to the First Amendment of the United States is what they are attempting to do here. The court has to presume you have a capacity based upon the properly supported, sufficient, and adequate complaint, however. They're going to ask for ID. I'm suggesting something else. A lot of people don't want to hear this. I don't know what else to start doing. We got to do lots of things. This is one of the things that comes to my mind all the time. The court has to presume you have a capacity, which means you're a minor. The government, if you do the supported, sufficient, adequate complaint, the government would have the burden to show that you didn't. Now, what device, what action do you supply that flips that burden? Nothing other than the habeas corpus. And so your restraint of your liberty and the denial of your First Amendment would be at least starting of it. So I wonder, instead of presenting that ID that they're going to ask for to the companies, actually, this is the third party. Understand, we're going to talk about this down the line here. Third party liability. Third party is also liable if they do it wrong. And they are also held to a standard that cannot, even though it is upon the government, it's been attached by the courts to say these things through the government attach to the agents that are working with the government. So listen for that through some of these tabs. So I wonder, instead of presenting an ID when it's demanded of you, you were to go down and file a habeas corpus petition for the restraint of your liberty, which that would then flip that burden to the government. You don't have to prove it. They do. Or you run an equity injunction. You enjoin that obligation that is put on you. If that would, and I'm wondering if that would be enough. Your lawsuit would be enough identification that you are not a minor to satisfy the law and prove the point of the law's lawlessness as applied to non-minors. Now, I think that would be a slam dunk case. Well, unless you live in a Lincolnized post-founding father era occupation. So take that under advisement too, but it requires that you study well the potentials here and be ready to properly respond as they try to evade, the government tries to evade the organic law as you take them behind the woodshed. I don't think some of you are capable. I'm asking you to do it. Some of you want to shrug your shoulders and say it doesn't work. I'm looking at any aspect that will start to cause the question. Bring an example to people. And be ready for the loss, because, as I've said, we're in an occupied territory. And it depends. I would say when you study well, how to succinctly state what you need to state so it has no question or issue attached. That's the only way I can figure out this does it. And they either acknowledge that in you and anybody else, or they expose that we're in an occupied territory. They don't intend to follow the law, why we have so many problems. We don't have a problem, and we don't want small brains, and we want, you know, people that are psychologically stable. We don't need any more. This information from the too intelligent and psychologically stable to be a cop department, it's getting worse. Pittsburgh police candidates allowed to retake their psychological evaluations after dozens failed. Pittsburgh police are reviewing how they evaluate potential recruits psychologically after about 24 candidates were rejected from the Bureau. The vast majority of candidates who received conditional offers were rejected on psychological grounds in early May, delaying plans for a recruit class during a time when more officers are retiring or leaving the Bureau than joining. Police psychological exams are performed to assess applicants' emotional stability and psychological suitability to be an officer, according to the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Days after the candidates were rejected, Mayor Ed Gainey said that they would be invited back for a second evaluation with the new psychologists, and upon passing, will join the ranks of the forthcoming recruitment class. So fail or handpick the psychologists is only not only a bad look, not a good look on the psychologist's profession either, but they're going to pick and choose who's going to be the psychologist of choice to get this done. The article goes on to say, when you read it, and you should, you see like all these little, I don't read but a little part of a lot of this stuff, and it's a lot more integrated than what I'm bringing up. I just expose it to you to pay attention and be aware and understand what the shift that's going on so that we can keep a track of that. And you have to think about that. Does that what you want in your world? Because they're moving it there. And if you don't, you don't want to be susceptible to it. Somewhere you're going to have to step up. It's not stopping itself. For years, accusations of discrimination and racial undertones have raised concerns about Bureau's hiring practice. Now, there's concern that the Bureau may be meeting its severe staffing shortage by lowering its officer standards, said Beth Pittinger, the executive director of Citizens Police Review Board. Quote, is the standard to get other psychologists, or is the answer to look at our expectations and the caliber of individual we want as a police officer, she said. Quote, we need to know officers are psychologically intact and are there for the right reasons. We don't just need to hand them a test and ask them how they feel about their mother, Mr. Zelig says, but we consider what the applicant tells us, and we look at their background, and we sort of ask ourselves, is there anything unresolved or uncertain about this person? It's only then that the psychological testing is used to clear up those ambiguities, he said. But as the agencies across the country face severe staffing shortages, Mr. Zelig said, the diligence can sometimes be overlooked, and lowering the bar for officers, he said, can have catastrophic results. And understand, when there's a catastrophic result, the taxpayer will pay. And that's probably you. So when we look at this, it's harder to find now, as we move through, as society gets more complex, it's harder to find the Goldilocks cop because of psychologically unresolved and uncertain issues. So what's that mean? Those increasing unresolved psychological issues live in your town, and there's no bar to filter out the catastrophic results, which the government nevertheless will feed upon. Understand how they work this through. The caliber of people apparently is falling, and maybe it's consistent with the smartphone use. And speaking about feeding upon, maybe those donuts too, where we're pharma here and we're here to help you. No, we're pharma and we're here to help just us. As we see these studies that come through, and remember, I've been reporting on the so-called peer review, science is not. And so pay attention to that, but we'll read these things just for the moment now because we need to keep aware. It might give us a different answer. Study shows weight loss drugs can fight cancers. A study presented at the world's largest cancer conference found that patients who take weight loss drugs are 19% less likely to develop 13 obesity-related cancers, including ovarian, liver, colorectal, pancreatic, and breast cancer, which having the chance of developing bowel cancer in patients with type 2 diabetes. Experts are saying weight loss jabs from brands like Ozempic and Wegovy could potentially delay or even prevent cancer. They found not only that do the jabs play a potential role in preventing the treat and treating cancer, but also found that patients were half as likely to die over a 15-year period compared to patients not taking the weight loss drugs. And the GLP-1 receptor agonist, RA, the research also found that those who had undergone bariatric surgery saw their risk of cancer fall about 19%, although those who used their jabs lost significantly more. So why isn't the takeaway from all this appetite-suppressing weight loss drug being to eat less and fast more and find the proper healthy diet before the drug intervention? This is obesity-related. Again, the quick fix or the quick promise. Let's just throw this other thing in. Maybe the fact that you're eating less, and maybe eating less, why? Because this also may indicate another potential problem. If it does need this chemistry, they've poisoned your food with their chemistry, and maybe that's eating less of that is what we're seeing. So I don't know why the takeaway here to help y'all might not be to eat better, eat less, eat better, and fast occasionally, and see how that works first. And I can say, after without going too far afield, after helping obese women when I used to sell products that were very, very good, I wouldn't have done it if I hadn't been, that were health products. Long, long time ago, the obesity problem is a real big problem, but one thing I'll suggest, one of the hardest cases to resolve, was a young woman, obese, and what it turned out to be. Oh, it didn't matter what I did, and I was given her the product at cost, just to give it to her, actually lots of people got it at cost, just to get try to help them. What it ended up being wasn't even the diet or what they were taking. It didn't matter what they took in. Their body was imbalanced. Their mineralization was wrong. And once I came onto that, this is a long time ago, looking at what the body does and what it needs, and feeding that instead of just feeding it anything. When I got under the right combination, her weight just started to shed. And I said, that's the real part of it right there. So not that that's the only answer. I just want to pass that on. Look at your mineralization, at your mineral balances in your body. It's not quite so simple. It takes a little bit of work. So I just want to point out, maybe this is an analysis that says maybe we should just be eating better. And maybe cancer just doesn't show up. You're not taking in all the stuff that's poisoning us. I don't see the proof against that. But on ongoing here, cancer that the Ozempic and Wegovy will not stop. On the heels of last week, and now Hochul in New York, the federal Real ID compliant licenses or ID cards will become mandatory for U.S. domestic air travel. So as they see to the news cycle about the TSA and all that, this is what they was coming up onto. Heavily criticized federal ID program, Real ID, is set to become a mandatory for domestic air travel in the U.S. on May 7, 2025. Now, you listen behind what's said to be listening and hearing what we're saying and what I'm saying and what's being reported. And so don't just throw your hands up, oh, that's happening. Again, this is just an administration of something, and you have to understand the subject matter. So they say they're going to implement it on May 7, 2025. Once in effect, the federal scheme will ban adults from domestic flights unless they have replaced traditional state-issued IDs with real ID. And the mandate will also extend to citizens' ability to access some federal facilities. This is not much more different than the PATIROT Act, when they will not allow you to walk in the front end of a federal court, but they will handcuff you and drag you in the back door. If people hadn't noticed what the problem is in this country, and this is part of it, the origin of the legislation goes back to 2005 and the Real ID Act, that's REAL ID Act, which is explained by the Department of Homeland Security as standardization of the issuance of ID cards, driver's licenses, and similar forms of identification. And listen, for those of you that have ears to hear, listen very careful lee there on the similarity and the status of what they're actually talking about. And the middle word is driver's license. Go look at the jurisdiction that issues this and go look at the jurisdiction over which Congress has right to regulate. Starting in the spring of 2025, travelers will no longer be able to use traditional driver's licenses, although passports are an option. That means that for adults in the U.S. without a passport, according to the State Department, only less than half have it. Getting real ID or enhanced ID will be the only options, but the latter will not be accepted in domestic air travel, only for crossing sea or land border with Mexico and Canada. Quote, by definitively turning driver's licenses into a form of national identity documents, Real ID would have a tremendous destructive impact on privacy, the least of it, their quotes. ACLU said it on its website, noting that these concerns have held back full adoption in many states. And they have, but a lot of them have over the years gone ahead and adopted it. But look at the jurisdiction. Look at what they're really speaking to. And in this story, if you look carefully, you got a possessive driver's license. They're not a possessive. Drivers don't possess the license. And so there's a misunderstanding about what's going on here. I want you to understand all this, because if you look at it clearly and start watching, you can identify these errors. You look past them, but you understand. You know what you're looking at. And you know what they're talking about, actually. And then it starts to build. Whether or not you're going to get this, I don't know. But it starts to build what the status is there after unregulate. And then you figure out how you're not that status. So what if, here for starters, you can't get an ID because you don't qualify under state residency requirements, because you know that's what really it means here, that it's in commerce. It's a commerce connection, and you can't get the state ID because you're not resident anywhere. How do you establish that? They're talking about creating an impossibility. Some of you that want to go do some research about this, go research about impossibilities. And consider that. Consider making a situation where you do not show there's any possibility. The one requirement is residency. There's a whole bunch of ways you can prove that. There's a whole bunch of ways the government will prove it. You have to avoid all of it. Then what? So besides being a man or woman, you have a right of ingress and egress in the land of the free, but the government is duty-bound to protect against the slightest encroachment, we're told. And we're going to hear some cases where there is still the reflection that there's rights available. The organic law is there. I've talked to you also about savings clauses on these various rights that were organic, that were run down by the Lincolnization and then subsequently the sustainability aspect of what's going on. Again, the provisions of a savings clause are unless otherwise provided by law. You jump in there. You show how there's something else that stops what they're doing. The requirements presumes here you are a national threat, doesn't it, when you look at this? And without due process as well, correct? So you are, but the point is that you actually are presumed innocent, and the government would have to show you that you aren't. If you follow the logic of the first remedy I was telling you before, it's right here as well. So this sounds, again, like another habeas petition, doesn't it? And you're flipping the burden. And the government, has to show how you are the wrongdoer. And they have made a presumption that you're a misdemeanor, but they can't make it attach. And so, unless here, you can, I do that, but unless you live in a democracy, of course, and not the Republican form of representative government constrained by law, you've got to be careful. So if you live in a democracy, which you hear all over the place, that's what they're imposing on us, and not that Republican form, you may be facing a little bit of trouble. It doesn't mean that Republican form is not there. Those are the savings clauses. And I don't get too patriotic about this, but it is, this distinction is what makes the United States of America, the Americans, the people, different than the rest of the world. It's essentially right here. And so for those of you that want to consider these things, and you want to have a standard and a principle to live by, and how we've been run down by this co-option, this occupation over the top, this veneer of authority that comes by a term, that is promoted as a term everywhere. Can you understand the rudiments of how they moved you from what you are to what they want you to be? You'll maybe gather more what I've been saying in oh so many broadcasts. Something I cannot put down in a form because every case is different and it won't matter anyway. You'll likely mess it up until you see what you see. You have the eyes to see, you have the ears to hear, and you act through that truth, that knowledge. And it's a war. So don't think you're walking in and you got the shield that's going to stop it. You're going to be, all the best you might be able to do is neutralize the threat. That's why I say it's going to probably take more of us. And I don't know how that's going to come about. In the meantime, we do have reflection that there's rights. And if you properly present them, you will see that come back at you. So while we're in Huchel, and while we're looking at this issue with the real ID coming on us, understand that too. And we'll get to this in another tab. Those are all policies considerations. There's no real law behind it. And so when you understand that, that's another element that you bring. There's actually no administrative course they can put you through. But here, while we're in New York at this point, where you're getting pressed to have your right to travel, and I mean that in the way it says traveling, not necessarily the driver's license, the travel, the right of ingress and egress to get about. NRA triumphs in free speech battle with former New York regulator. The Supreme Court has paved the way for the National Rifle Association to pursue a lawsuit against a former New York State official asserting that their free speech rights were infringed upon. And understand today in these themes, one of the themes is officials and people, third parties, are still amenable. People in government are still amenable. Third parties to a corporation are amenable. You're going to hear executives are amenable to a lawsuit if you properly frame it and do it correctly and look and make sure that you do have done it. And this is not about talking a lot. This is about actually not talking so much. Don't talk so much you make an argument. You make the facts, laws applied to the facts that settle the matter before you even get started. The NRA lawsuit claims that following the tragic Parkland, Florida school shooting in 2018, which resulted in 17 deaths, Vulo coerced banks and insurance companies into severing ties with the NRA, raising First Amendment concerns. So think about that connection. Who'd have thunk it? Your bank account can actually affect your First Amendment rights. The NRA contends the Vulo actions amounted to an unconstitutional suppression of their free speech. The NCLA also filed an amicus brief in the case. The court rules 9-0. But look closer at the decisions that were coming out of the Supreme Court. It's not free speech, but freedom of expression, and it's regulable. And this is where you really have to start paying attention. Where are you in this relative to what you're trying to do? In this case, the NRA was fine. They're going to get the benefit of the First Amendment at this point. On May 30th, the court's unanimous ruling overturned a previous lower court's dismissal of the NRA's lawsuit against Maria Vulo, the former superintendent of the New York State Department of Financial Services. The ruling underscores that while advocacy groups are not exempt from regulation, government actions to suppress speech must adhere to the First Amendment protections. So did you get that? Advocacy groups are not exempt from regulation. Regulation means having freedom, the range of motion within a frame of constraint. Freedom does not mean being free. So understand these balances that are being put in, rightfully or wrongfully. I'm not going to decide that here. I'm just pointing out, it took someone to defend themselves because an official decided they didn't have a right. Justice Sonia Sotomayor emphasized, and look at the players here and what they're saying, 9-0 here, folks, across the political spectrum. Pretty clear violation. Quote, ultimately, the critical takeaway is that the First Amendment prohibits government officials from wielding their power selectively to punish or suppress speech directly or, as alleged here, through private intermediaries. So there is a limit to government when push comes to shove. The government is not as sovereign as it promotes. even in a Lincolnized democracy that we so-called enjoy today. It isn't free either, but is supposed to operate in a frame of constraint, this government issue, this limited form government, notwithstanding its war of terror against us either, not even through third-party agents. So we see a glimpse of the republic. It is not dead yet, though it needs a bit of shoving, it seems, because it doesn't maintain itself. Quote, the Supreme Court unanimously decision today was a crucial reaffirmation of fundamental First Amendment principles that the government cannot coerce private parties to suppress disfavored viewpoints, said NCLA's counsel Janine Jones. Let me clarify, not clarify, but add to this, coercion is what I've told you all the time. Coercion is the unwarranted interference under color of law, under color of authority even, it doesn't mean to be official, that adversely affects a right. The other term I expose and use and cite is extortion. That is on the property itself. So this is speaking to the right that we have of this. And it is a glimpse that the republic still sits there to be had. And if there was more of us that could push forward, we might see more of that. And I say that advisedly, knowing that we're sitting in a very corrupt judicial avenue, which lots of people will scoff at me when I say this stuff. I tend to believe it's a tool. I tend to believe we keep slamming them, and wherever we can, wherever our skills allow us. We try to look at like the habeas. That flips the burden. I tell you, always try to flip the burden. That's coming out of the gate that way. Set yourself up with the properly stated facts to make it so that you cannot be hit, and that the government now has to show that you're not. You're not what you're saying. They have to prove it. To me, that seems to be a very clear path. Here's another reference, though, with this Real ID promotion, with a number of different things to know about it to avoid these usurpations that are coming down. Where we see the new DHS publicity about the Real ID from Papers, Please. I'll just go through a couple things here. Again, these are just, I bring these issues, if you find them interesting, start taking notes and start expanding on them. I can only touch so much. There's so much work that has to be done, and a lot more people are going to have to start taking this on. Otherwise, it is very short. That it's going to be so many people. The majority will be voting with their chains against us. In this case, May 7th, 2025, as I talked about before, but now we're going to revisit some of the points of avoidance, like the NRA did to say, us reassert their rights. This is sitting in here to do once we see more of this story, and we get someone else's opinion on what they think that you might want to do. And I say, oh, I'm going to read this, and we're going to find out what they think and add that to your list. A year before the most recently self-imposed deadline, in quotes, deadline on which the Department of Homeland Security has threatened to start illegally denying passage through Transportation Security Administration, TSA, checkpoints at airports to would-be travelers without ID, it deems sufficiently compliant with the Real ID Act of 2004, the DHS has launched a new campaign of advertisements, press releases, and signs in airports to publicize its threat to start restricting the right to fly without ID. So those of you that see this coming, get prepared. You can actually probably do an action before. I'm suggesting that you go this hard line. Don't get the ID. You don't have one. You can't get one. You don't meet the residency requirements in every state, which is what? Federal. The requirements of federal is federal U.S. citizen residency in the state. Municipal law. Commerce law. Are you that status? Starting May 7, 2025, you need a Real ID to board domestic flights, the TSA says, with a footnote in which the smaller print says, or acceptable alternative. Is that threat real? The author says, no. Number one, the May 7, 2025 date is entirely arbitrary, not fixed by law, and has been extended time and time again for years, and can and likely be extended again. Whether or not it is, but it is, we will see, but it has been extended. There's tons of problems with what they're doing here. And the states are real hesitant, although lots of states just capitulate. Number two, perhaps in response to our criticism on their previous litany of lies about the Real ID Act and the ID the ID to fly, the TSA has added a footnote to the latest signage for acceptable alternative. What's not obvious is that an acceptable alternative to the real ID to fly is no ID at all. As the TSA has admitted, thousands of people fly without ID every year. Nothing in the Real ID Act and no current or proposed legislation or regulation could change them. Number three, imposing a requirement to have, carry, or show ID to travel by common carrier, even if that were constitutional, which we don't think it would be, would require new legislation and or regulations. So here we're just even watching they're acting without any underlying legislation. There then cannot be any promulgated rule, which is the regulation. We're just talking about some advertisement now. And let's not forget, there has to be an appropriation of money to do this from Congress. If you start listing these things down, these are the things you would throw in a habeas. They don't have this authority at all for these reasons. And then you'd hopefully research better than me just talking to you here or this writer putting it out. And you'd verify the condition around that, those discussions, which shouldn't be a question, shouldn't be an issue. And then you put it on them and you say the burden's yours to show that this isn't the way this is supposed to be. And you've infringed my right to ingress and egress and travel and do my right of free association, be free from association. I'll hit a couple of those here. But TSA, reading here, has twice in 2016 and again in 2020 given notice that it intended to propose new procedures to require air travelers to show ID. But it never actually submitted those proposals, much less obtained the required regulatory approvals. Let me add there, that's that Federal Register. You get to comment on it. So if you're interested in this stuff at all, if you are focused on these things and you want a right to travel, this is one of those things you can get to cut your teeth on. No jeopardy, where you're hitting them with the administrative side of this. And this is another thing. If they haven't gone through the Federal Register, or they don't have, or they have forms that don't have the, I think it's an MBA number, those are all invalid. Right off the federal laws for all this stuff. You invalidate everything they're doing if you know this stuff. Ignorance is not going to help you, and they'll just exploit that ignorance. Numerous procedural steps would be required before any such plan could go into effect. I guess I'm suggesting that's exactly what the point is. Federal Register, we got a whole bunch of hearings. I've talked about this over and over and how you can jump in. Make yourself something to be contended with. And I don't mean just because you're obstinate. No, you have the answers. You have what's going on. You can step in and show how they're violating. Now you have standing to go to court if you want to go that way. But travelers can and should say no to these DHS-TSA attempts to intimidate us into surrendering our rights. If you put it into intimidation, that's another type of crime. That's a crime in the state. Find these words in your local laws if they're doing that. Now, they're going to say the port is some special enclave. Just keep pressing through it. You're still obstructed underneath this color of authority, whatever it is. Now, you can read more at the link in the broadcaster or posted on Sound Mind's various sites and platforms and the various syndication channels that are going on. Thank you all for all doing that. I understand we're having, in a month, like 100,000 or over views now to the broadcast. Amount of time, I admit, I don't know total time, but we do have a lot more hitting going on since Sound Minds has picked up and done what he done. So I thank you all for helping him too. And thank you as I think about it. Thanks for the donations that are coming in. They are needed. There's a lot of work going behind that we're not talking about too much. I told you that. But those donations are very, very, very helpful to getting this thing moved along, getting more, if you will, the infrastructure, the capacity to pull this off. It's going to take a little while, and there's a lot of learning going on. But I do appreciate when you step up, even though we're not asking, and you donate what you can. Thank you very much. So find these links and go read them and start getting a sense of what we're talking about. Again, not everyone will be interested. Someone has to be interested in them. If no one's interested in any of the stuff I talk about, we're a done people. They will have conquered us. They will do it quietly. The resistance is not going to be televised because it wasn't going to be one. We never even understood it. And part of this moving back into the issues with the government and the fascism that goes on, public-private partnerships, and that works working what with the DHS, it works with the TSA, all those commerce carriers. They blame you for the commerce carrier doing commerce is not a good answer. But the habeas would flick all that around if you had properly situated that. And again, you don't hand them 1,000 pages of proof. It's really a simple set of short paragraphs just explaining the position that you have, that they have infringed, that they didn't have a right to infringe, or they're infringing under color. And you just make your statements on your affidavit and in support, and the evidence in support, and you work with it until you figure it out a lot better. But because these SMART phones really aren't too intelligent to be influencing your kids, those commercial little goats, this just in from the Not Don't Be Evil department, Google's privacy blunder, sensitive data, and kids' voices scooped up. Big data, folks, this was all about. And this is all just for control in many different facets of your life, and the control and the ability to see to control. A recently leaked internal Google database offers yet more insights into the giants, questionable, this might be David and Goliath here, huh? Giants, questionable security practices and policies around collecting and storing users' personal data. And I don't know why this is a question. There is no way that I have seen, that I have understood, that I've talked to you for years, how there is any security practices that are sufficient in the digital realm. All the corruption aside, it just isn't possible. The database consists of thousands of reports filed by Google's own employees covering a variety of incidences, writes the 404 Media, which said it has had access to the documents. The database that is now public covers the period between 2013 and 2018 for the instances described in reports as qualified as unintentional or result from either human or technology error, both by Google, its employees and tech, and contractors, third parties, etc. On and on, folks. Go look at some of these. Don't just click past them. Go look at some of these vendors that they call are required. They're essential vendors. There's thousands. I never thought this thing would be this integrated. But getting back to this story, what Google just inadvertently did, oops, these include exposing more than 1 million email addresses and likely at the same time the user's IP addresses and geolocation, with these particular incidents being anything but short-lived. This went on for over a year. The emails were available via the source code of the site of Google acquisition, Socratic.org. In a case from 2016, an employee filed a report revealing that Google's algorithm transcribing text from Street View images captures license plates as text, the result of which is that its database, quote, now inadvertently contains a database of geolocated license plate numbers and license plate number fragments. Although Google has a filter to prevent its speech service from recording children, this failed in at least one documented instance when about 1,000 data files containing children's voices were recorded over a period of an hour. The relevant report from the leaked database claimed that all the log data had been deleted. Well, why are they recording in the first place is what I wanted to know. Anyway, and that's the children. You guess the adults, they don't care. They've given that up. Going on, yet more incidents include a Waze carpool feature leaking home addresses and trips taken by users. This was qualified by Google as non-intentional. Well, if they said it was intentional, it might be crime. See, that's what they know. Right? They know what they're doing. It's knowing and intending is a crime if it violates something. So this is just non-intentional. Just an oops, folks. Oops. So let me just back off a little bit back and just move a little bit more into where the future is that we're going in the digital realm. You're hearing about it all the time now. So has anybody considered the security vulnerabilities against an AI data scraping system that captures all this big data before it's deleted? Then it is programmed to figure out where you live. It was so fast it would just go through and just correlate all this stuff for someone. It finds out where you live, where your little goats live. Maybe even assembles the voices of one sibling to call the other on their phone, smart or dumb, to tell them to come outside and see the new puppy at the car outside that was located there, geolocated by this this big data to put the old man right there at your curbside. Or worse, the voice of the mother or father telling their little one to go and get an ice cream from the man outside that geolocated your house from the company that stopped promoting to Don't Be Evil. Because, well, oops. A different type of fascist government and corporate threat to us all here. There's a lot of fluff and storytelling in this article to soften the admissions, but we'll keep to the foundation of the actual problem as I try to go through this just quickly again. I just barely skimmed some of these through just to let you know they're here. I think they're important to be aware of. I think they're pivotal things in our lives that may go by that I think people need to take note of. But COVID vaccines may have helped fuel the rise in excess deaths. Now, let me just say the fluff and the softening up here. May have. COVID vaccines. They agreed there was vaccines. I've talked about this innumerable times about all the fallacies about this. I'm not going to necessarily hit those. But this is what's starting to come out. And the important part is that it did come out. It's not just some alternative media site. COVID vaccines can be partly blamed for the rise in excess deaths since the pandemic, scientists have suggested. Another softening. All this is softening. They said that the unprecedented figures, now this is where I got me, unprecedented. I've told you over and over. One-off things, new things like this, where the experts are telling you something for the first time, pay attention. And then you have to work through that and then extrapolate out what they're not telling you. Hopefully you have a base of foundation of good information, and you can do this real time as you're reading. Unprecedented figures, quote, raise serious concerns, close quote. I wonder why. And called on governments to fully investigate the underlying causes, including possible vaccine harms. Possible. Quote, you'd think it was a study they'd figure it out. Right? This is the whole point about a lot of this stuff. Quote, both medical professionals and citizens have reported serious injuries and deaths following vaccination to various official databases in the Western world. That's a big place. They added, quote, during the pandemic, it was emphasized by politicians and the media on a daily basis that every COVID-19 death mattered and every life deserved protection through containment measures and the COVID-19 vaccines in the aftermath of the pandemic. The same moral should apply. Well, it wasn't a moral response, folks. It was a plausible empathy promoted to cover the fraud, to affect the most people possible. The article goes on to say here, researchers said that the figure included deaths from COVID-19, but also the, quote, indirect effects of the health strategies to address the virus spread and infection. They warned that the side effects linked to the COVID vaccine had included isochemic stroke, acute coronary syndrome, and brain hemorrhage, cardiovascular disease, coagulation, hemorrhages, gastrointestinal events, and blood clotting. But here the joke was on us because there was the virus that could spread, and no infectious agent non-fraudulently demonstrated as local communicable disease law requires. That means that they could not stop anything, and therefore, as a matter of the local communicable disease law, there were no vaccines. There is no vaccines. As a matter of law, without a dual use, these were absolutely defined as bioweapons. And the effects were not indirect or side effects, as this little softening up attack expose shows. These are direct causes of a bioweapon. The concurrent effects of the oh-so-moral operation or warp speed. Gordon Wishart, chief medical officer at Check for Cancer and visiting professor of cancer surgery at Angela Ruskin University, warned repeatedly that delaying cancer diagnosis would lead to deaths. Quote, it was predicted early in the lockdown period that limited access to healthcare for non-COVID conditions would lead to delays in the diagnosis and treatment of time-critical conditions such as cancer, cardiac disease, diabetes, and dementia, and this would lead to excess deaths from these conditions, he said. Look at the cover-up here that they pulled off. So this is the important thing here as well is this is a headline from the Telegraph, a lamestream media government mouthpiece. Can I read that title again? Sure I can. COVID vaccines may have helped fuel rise in excess deaths. But there were no side effects, as I've said. What is being seen is direct effect of a bioweapon, an analog to a protein venom. And I explained this way back when. Notice the effects are both blood clotting and hemorrhaging. There's a couple of others. I'm just going to focus on these. The occurrence of both at the same time was neither snake venom that was promoted at the time, if you remember, and you remember me covering this. Each snake did one or the other. You either had blood clotting or coagulation or you hemorrhaged. They didn't do both. But which venomous creature causes both? It was from the South American silkworm, I think I said at the time. But if not, go check it out. It's pretty clearly what the effects and side effects are. We can recall that the story of the young woman, I think it was, that stepped on a cluster of these spiked worms, was immediately placed under doctor's emergency care, but within 3 to 5 days, I don't know exactly, I can't remember this exactly, but she dies despite her immediate care. Her symptoms were mostly everything stated in the expose, in particular, the coagulation, the hemorrhaging, and blood clot. Remember, she had bruises all over her body from the internal hemorrhaging that was going on. She's also bleeding from her eyes and other places. The only natural thing in the world that I found, as I told you then and doing it right now, is this silkworm venom. But the novel, I should say, and the novel lab-made lipidized protein string analog bioweapon, which causes very much the same reactions and is patented by the CDC given the name SARS-CoV-2 in 2003, right? So, we look at the results, we look at these effects, we look at the government mouthpiece admission, and we can bring ourselves right back to what we knew long years ago now. It's already, four and a half years now. It could have been avoided. And the way I was saying you do it is you use the communicable disease law and the due process protections, and again, bringing up the habeas corpus. And I showed you how simple it would be, no different than today. You got two more examples of how you can use that to set up your record and get it to flip the burden. And now the shoe's on the other foot. They can't presume you to be a criminal, even though the law and why they brought it in says you're a terrorist. They also, through the utility of these third parties, the private partnership fascism, they're doing this through the system. As I told you, the governments, the companies that were going to keep you from your job were those third-party people in the COVID swindle. The great COVID swindle could have been stopped there as well. Some of you did. Some of you didn't. Some of you were handed the paperwork and still couldn't. And I said then, this is the problem. We need to toughen ourselves up. We need to get more versed in how we're going to protect ourselves from this just abject lawlessness. It's everywhere anymore. So here, when I say fascism, the public-private corruption, we see NIH scientists made $710 million in royalties from drug makers as a fact that they tried to hide. Maybe why not? I mean, if you're in a criminal gang, you don't want your goodies found. But during the pandemic, the American people started to feel the big government was a very cozy with big pharma. Now we know just how close they were. New data from the National Institutes of Health reveal that the agency and its scientists collected $210 million in royalties during the pandemic from late 2021 through 2023. These are payments made by private companies like the pharmaceuticals to license medical innovations from government scientists. Almost all that cash, $690 million, went to the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, the sub-agency led by Dr. Anthony Fauci, and 260 of its scientists. Information about this vast private royalty complex is tightly held by the National Institutes of Health. My organization, OpenTheBooks.com, was forced to sue to uncover the royalties paid from September 20, 2009 to October 2021, which amounted to $325 million over 56,000 transactions. It's unclear if any of the COVID vaccine royalties from Pfizer and Moderna, the latter of which settled with NIH by agreeing to pay $400 million, is even included in these new numbers, and NIH is not saying. The American people have one last crack at getting some candor from Fauci in the face of our COVID response when he testifies before the House Select Subcommittee on the coronavirus pandemic. There's a plenty to answer for. He spent years scoffing at questions about the potential conflicts of interest between COVID policymakers who relentlessly pushed vaccines and recipients of private royalties. It's a chance to either come clean for Fauci or further cement the public's perception of him in the NIH as a secretive and self-interested. And I want to address this Fauci dude. Fauci certainly deserves a comeuppance, but he's not the only one. And I'm concerned with the fervor to hang Fauci, causing him to be a scapegoat here, will allow all the others with the duty and obligation to protect the people, they'll get away with it. I'm talking about the derelict local public health officials and governors. Then the federalities, that includes Trump, and the Congress critters appropriating the funds to initiate the operation at warp speed. All of them. They all are actually more guilty. The organic establishment requires the local officials had the lawful power, not Fauci. Fauci might have his own problems with this, but you see, it was really almost all before. And we heard about those stories on the setup. But actually, Fauci wasn't the one who pulled the trigger and to kill people and hurt them. And I've been explaining that for years now. I'm real concerned with what I see going through the feeds of the social media, so-called, the comments, that people are losing the narrative, losing the story. They're losing the thing they need to know. They never really had it, I guess, is the problem there. But they want this guy to swing. And if we are not careful, that will be used to silence the matter, because it'll be done, and the rest will eventually walk. His advice, Fauci's advice or position, is irrelevant to all this. It's irrelevant to local communicable disease state law power. It's how the organic establishment was made. Nothing he said in Washington, D.C. had any power or influence at all relative to the law. Yet we let Rand Paul lead the Fauci lynching mob and allow him to let all the culpable live to be derelict another day to kill the rest of us. See, Rand Paul promotes vaccines as a doctor. He is as culpable for not knowing his local communicable disease law to bring proper accountability as they are too. He's also one of them. And for handing here, if you listen, I told you what was going on in these Senate testimonies. He handed Fauci the dual-use exception reliance during that Senate testimony without rebuttal from Rand Paul. And it's not like he hasn't been told by me on ex-Twitter numerous times. So the lack of valid response is no surprise when those that purportedly represent you are actually compromised by them, pharmaceutical, military-industrial complex, whomever, the dual citizen, the chosen, whatever we want to call all these underlying undue influences that are really hurting us because we aren't a people yet that will rely on our own laws to protect us. Again, a limited form of government, they're limited by that black and white I keep telling you about. We heard that in the NRA case just earlier in the broadcast. It's really not that hard to put together, actually. So the lack of valid response here is no surprise when those that purportedly represent us are compromised. What might be an October surprise, though, with nothing more COVID contagious to promote, with the demise of that treaty that we've heard about It failed. And for now, and we're moving on, where the health treaty didn't quite get the consensus that it needed, and they ain't going away. They made it about three-quarters of the way down the field, and then they dropped the ball, and so they get a second down. Don't think they're going away. But this government's going to keep moving on. It's playing multidimensional chess here. And we're going to, sounds like, on these this next moving the next story through the so-called medical, through these labs, it sounds like the United States government military labs are cooking up the October surprise, and I suggest that we should be afraid. This is where, and I don't mean afraid to fear, but be afraid that they're actually going to do it and do something. And then I say here, really? No? Maybe? They're not going to do anything. They're going to foment a perception of fear, and we can buy into it. Biden fears October surprise by Russia and North Korea. We can move this fear agenda on and on and on. Like I said, across the board, across the whole of the world. And people continue to buy into it. And I've been trying to get people to see the more objective basis. And don't let them get away with it if it starts to affect you. Again, domestic flights will require this usurpation of your rights. And it's all done by an agency. Biden fears October surprise. Well, I'm suggesting maybe that's a signal that there may be an October surprise. Typically, it's the economic surprise. So let's maybe get ready, as I've been saying, prepare for all these economic hits as they run these stories to cover. U.S. officials are reportedly fretting that Moscow and Pyongyang may escalate tensions to help Donald Trump win back the presidency. So Biden doesn't sound like he knows where he's at most of the time, but what's he afraid of that his regime isn't fomenting is what I thought about when I read just the headline. White House officials are reportedly worried that Russia and North Korea may conspire to ramp up a geopolitical tensions just before this year U.S. presidential election to the Republican candidate Donald Trump defeat incumbent Joe Biden. And for either president, what changes things and how relative to the office of the president is this? I don't understand some of these connections they try to make. Either one of them, no matter who gets in the office. The White House is bracing for the possibility that Kim will take provocative military actions at Putin's behest to boost Trump's chances in the November election, the outlet added, citing six unidentified senior officials. Quote, we have no doubt that North Korea will be provocative this year, a U.S. intelligence officer said. Quote, it's just a matter of how escalatory it is. Such a move could be meant as an October surprise, meaning a shocking action shortly before the election to manipulate voters. But what is this story? It's long before October to manipulate voters. Plant the seeds. So, again, this reference to October surprise, there is no doubt that a provocative economic calamity will happen. And I would see, and under cover of this story here, so I would say brace yourselves. If you'll remember, the Democrats accused Russia of interfering in the 2016 U.S. election, but Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russiagate investigation found no collusion occurred between Moscow and the victorious Trump campaign, which I find hard not to believe is the election tampering, but far worse here than anything Kim Un could concoct up here. The Democrats and Biden regime have shown no limit on how much they will sanction the world to create the economic blowback to hurt America or foment war. What will Brandon do? Launch a missile at the United States and blame North Korea? Because Kim Un hasn't seemed to be that unhinged as the United States is as it criminally spills more turmoil globally. And I want you to really think about this when you're listening to Putin. When it talks about nuclear, listen to his words. He is walking a tightrope relative to these lunatics wanting to go to nuclear war, as I was leaving last week's broadcast, moving into that. And I guess we'll now do the break. BTWRLM 580 is this episode, and you can't go wrong when you get behind a woodshed. And I'm suggesting you're going to have to do something, otherwise these lunatics are going to win. Otherwise these lunatics are going to use democracy as the weapon and win the day, and we're going to be seeing a lot more woe than we have been. Again, that comes in a lot of different ways. They're using this thing around Ukraine to continue to pull this off, to create the fear. The United States did that because, folks, democracy expired. Why is Zelensky no longer Ukraine's legitimate president? You have to understand what's going on here, because we're propping this illegitimacy up. Volodymyr Zelensky's term in office ran out on May 20th, so speaking of his legitimacy makes no sense. Andrei Yakovlev, chairman of the Yakovlev and Partners Moscow Bar Association, told Sputnik. In turn, the President Vladimir Putin has said that Russia will proceed from the fact that Zelensky's legitimacy as Ukrainian head of state has expired. Quote, the martial law in the country is introduced in February 2024, 2022, by a presidential decree and then ratified by the parliament's overwhelming majority. Thus, Kiev cut off its path to changing Ukraine's constitution, Yakovlev pointed out. He added that currently there is a sort of legal absurdity in Ukraine in which the constitutional norms and steps made by Zelensky and the parliamentary exclude the possibility of changing the constitution and giving the president the legitimacy. Even if Zelensky may be recognized by some, any act signed by him after May 20th without any clarification from the constitutional court is unlikely to have legal force, the chairman of the Moscow Bar Association argued. He has echoed He was echoed by Alexander Ignatov, executive director of the Russian Public Institute of Electoral Law, and recalled in an interview with Sputnik that Article 103 of Ukraine's constitution determines the presidential term to be 5 years. Let me interject something here. You realize these people in these countries are looking at other countries' constitutions. And this is what I've been suggesting. We all need to be more comprehensively knowledgeable about what's up in the world, because an ignorance of certain things will allow Biden regimes, Trump regimes, whatever deep state regime, to gain our attention and hold and fix our thoughts. And I'm asking us not to let that happen to us. Moreover, there is a 2015 decision by Ukraine's Constitutional Court on the interpretation of this provision, quote, which clearly and unambiguously states that the only term for which the president of Ukraine can be elected for 5 years, regardless of any circumstance, condition, or exceptions. Alexander Dudchik, a leading researcher at the Institute of CIS Studies, has, meanwhile, told Sputnik that Ukrainian authorities have, in principle, been illegitimate since February 22, 2014, when a bloody coup carefully orchestrated by the West occurred in Kiev. Why was the Kiev regime recognized at that time? This was quite accurately formulated by Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Moscow only contacts Kiev because the Ukrainian authorities have millions of people under their control, but not all the deadlines have really expired, Dudchik pointed out, recalling that even in Ukraine, Zelensky is nicknamed the expired president. According to the expert, Zelensky is legitimate only for the West, but Russia is not obliged to follow the lead of those who do not observe the laws and who have been destroying international law for decades. Moscow doesn't consider Zelensky a head of state, albeit a puppet one, Dudchik underscored, commenting on Putin's remarks about Moscow's possible peace talks with Kiev. The expert said, there is no one to negotiate with in Ukraine, which is also the case in the West. So hundreds of billions of bucks have been appropriated to a known, soon-expired democracy for the sake of defending democracy shouldn't set well with the people, I would think. If people weren't dying to the last Ukrainian to create jobs at home, America would be a laughingstock. I'm not laughing. Are you laughing? None of us are laughing. The world is, though. Constitutional authority here, Zelensky's illegitimacy illegitimacy, deliberately created to escalate the Ukraine conflict. So we're actually, again, back facing the carnival mirror, looking back at what's really going on. We're looking at ourselves here from America in Ukraine. The illegitimacy of Volodymyr Zelensky's rule was intentionally set up to make negotiations with Russia impossible, one of the Ukrainian Constitution's authors tells Sputnik. The Ukrainian Constitution's author tells us this. The current constitution was adopted in 1996. Dmitry Tabachnik. Well, then the head of the Ukrainian presidential administration was one of the members of the Constitutional Commission that drafted the charter. He noted that the British model of prolonging the conflict in Ukraine has several aspects. The first is the gradual escalation of hostilities. Notice the British politicians are always the actors and promoters of the escalation, Tabachnik explained. The second is the complication of the negotiations. A special Jesuitical formula was designed to complicate negotiations consisting of 3 points. London is well aware that Russia, represented by its top leadership and foreign ministry, relies on the impeccable purity of legal formulas in international relations, so it will not negotiate with an illegitimate president. However, if negotiations with Kiev are impossible, there remains only one solution, Kiev's capitulation. Quote, in the case of accepting capitulation, legitimacy becomes secondary. Let me go ask you, if you're looking under international law, go look at the term capitulation. Go see what it's about. Quote, there are various interested parties in the bloody conflict in Ukraine. One of the most devious and cynical is Britain. Over the past few years, Britain has been trying to play its own separate game. Britain is primarily interested in prolonging the military actions and their escalation. Britain absolutely does not care about Zelensky's illegitimacy, the constitutional expert said. Creating stalemates between different great powers in Britain is typical Britain's method. To bring the great powers together along the lines of their immediate neighbors, he pointed out. This is how they tried to shake up the Austro-Hungarian Empire in the 19th century. This is how they made mischief along the entire perimeter of the Russian Empire. Quote, they need to solve a task to prolong hostilities as long as possible and exhaust and not only Russia, but also their favorite senior ally in the past, the younger brother, the U.S. So this is a very complex plan that's going on. The players are not who they say they are, the West. They are fomenting the initiative against a thing, Ukraine, they don't care about. It's just the pawn. We saw that when we see the investors coming in from the West to already pick up all the land, as if they're saying that Russia's not going to come and take it, as if it's done and said. So all you investors, watch where your money goes and who's asking you for it. But this is the condition of democracy, right? This has all been fomented by democracy. Article now looks at the reflection mirror effects. As I've been talking, what I call the carnival mirror, what the mirror reflects is U.S. reflecting Ukraine's disregard for democracy. As I explain here routinely, what you see reflected in that carnival mirror of the world events here that the United States does to people out there is reflecting in a contorted way what the United States government is doing to people in America, whether we the people see that or don't. Because under international law, job number one of an occupying force that wants to maintain control of the population is not to allow the inhabitants to perceive that you're there or to get you riled up. Better to get them to fight amongst themselves. And look around you here in America, so-called. Is the Biden administration replicating Volodymyr Zelensky's repression of dissidents in the United States, was the question. The United States foreign policy prerogatives have resulted in the country being allied by a number of questionable political figures, perhaps most notably Zelensky. Zelensky has been condemned for shuttering independent media and banning opposition parties in Ukraine, even as the Biden administration frequently casts the country's war with Russia as a battle of democracy versus authoritarianism. This is not a battle about democracy versus authoritarianism. This is the misunderstanding that's used to promote democracy. But poorly framed. Democracy is actually the weapon used to bring about authoritarianism. And this can be confirmed in the use of that term you just heard, prerogatives, attached to the U.S. foreign policy, not that of Ukraine. So this perspective suffers from the exaltation of democracy over the American organic Republican form representative government, constrained by law, and doesn't recognize democracy for the weapon that it is, the cover it provides for a tyranny, the future that they want to be brought worse to direct democracy or participatory democracy, that special brand of sustainable tyranny where there is no property and people like it. No property or appurtenant rights protected by law as a government obligation. Where do I get that? The mining law. I've been talking to you all the time. You see, there's an obligation. That limited for government sits there. It just sits there because it's not being invoked. And there's the usurpers inside the system that won't let you at it, which means we're going to need a lot more help. Whistleblower and former Ukrainian diplomat Audrey Telesenko discussed the Biden administration's partnership with such figures, responding to the news of a former U.S. Marine Corps intelligence officer and Sputnik contributor Scott Ritter being prevented from traveling to Russia, reportedly on orders from the U.S. State Department. Quote, "I experienced it myself almost a couple years ago," said Telesenko, "in response to the apparent act of a political persecution which resulted in Ritter's passport being confiscated without due process." And this is what I speak to, this due process. This is how you start to get them. You know it's supposed to be there. You can jump in on it. "I had a 24-hour notice before boarding the plane. I got an email from the U.S. Embassy in Kiev stating that my visa got pulled and that I'm under investigation and sanctions without any information. So I understand how they feel, and I wish them well," said the ex-diplomat. "The U.S. is showing its real democracy face today with the trial against President Trump, the political trial, the political situation, basically, of trying to get a candidate off the ballot by putting him in prison, even though that's going to be impossible to do. In fact, a couple more cases may have been delayed. And also, the way the due process works, it's going to take maybe to 2026. Begin it up again. But here we have U.S. citizens who are bordering a flight to go to Russia, and maybe they are one of the only few chances that the U.S. has to maintain a type of contact and have peace with Russia, says Telesenko, of figures like Ritter, who has vocally opposed U.S. support for Ukraine in its conflict with Moscow. Quote, "These guys are being pulled off the plane and having their passports taken without any reason." Listen to all the violations lined up and think about that habeas as I've been talking about it. Quote, "They had a secret warrant on journalist Julian Assange, too," noted host Jarmal Thomas. "Assange kept saying, there's a warrant, there's a warrant." And they were like, oh, he's just making it up. No, he was right. There was a secret warrant. This is what's happening today in America. That's why everybody's fed up with the American democracy around the globe. They don't want it anymore. Well, it's good to hear, if we listen to that, to hear the people are fed up. But because there is no supposed, and neither is there supposed to be, an American democracy. This is not an inconsequential observation on this. There's no American democracy, or one that's supposed to be ruled by the federales. But we are experiencing that in this Lincolnized post-founding father era of democracy, not a Republican form representative government constrained by law. And you watch and see how lawless it's becoming. That is almost earmarked, the definition of a democracy. It's a weapon. I guess I'll say it one more time here, as if I don't say it a bunch more. The CIA World Factbook, if you remember, I've talked about this for over years, will explain that the states of the United States are administrative districts. I read that to you in the Texas documents as well. It's a district, not a state. The Biden law to alter or abolish that occupation and usurpation's corruptions is left fallow by the purportedly fed up people allowing democracy to continue to impose civil rights. That's the right of those subject to the municipal code of the federales in Washington, D.C., that government, to enjoy the imposition upon the rest of you of extortions of every kind. That can be read at 42 U.S.C. 1981, as I always talk to you about. So maybe it's time for people full up with the feds to get behind the woodshed now and not tomorrow. And Woodman posted a good first question on X to begin, I think, this process. I haven't had time to respond to that. Again, I don't much like just firing anything off. And I'll see when I can respond. I'll see what I can do in 280 characters as well. But maybe what he responds to me as a question is a start. And there's going to have to be some straightening out of these issues. And we're going to have to come to common terms about what's going on and what really exists and what doesn't. And do we have to accept it? Do we have to acknowledge certain things? If we have to acknowledge, how are we going to work? It's a bigger discussion. We aren't even starting it. I appreciated Woodman's post, and I don't know quite what to deal with all that. It's a ton to deal with, but it does give us the ability to consider, what will it take? Are we going to let this democracy run us down? And we're going to abandon that Republican form, which I said I can show you. Is reflected through the mining law. And it's a property-based right of obligation by the government upon the protection of the property, so you get to go work it, and not be interfered with. And there has to be due process and probable cause and all that kind of stuff that we just don't really see too much today. But moving back here on the mirror effect, coming back to what they push with democracy, pushing the hard line, imposing the gang, the White House gang, imposing itself on the world, and also last week coming from this nuclear option that seems to be spreading around the world, not fomented by anybody but the United States government. Retired U.S. Army Force officer here says, scary how West pushing world to brink of nuclear war. Quote, how do you respond to this use of weapons and allowing them to attack and basically violate the sovereignty of Russia itself? Earl Rasmussen, a retired U.S. Army lieutenant colonel and international consultant, told Sputnik. Quote, if we look at these attacks, they're not targeting military targets, and they're targeting strategic targets. They're targeting civilians, many of them, or strategic targets as well. It's essentially basically authorizing supporting terrorism. While Russia pursues a policy of no first use nukes, Putin did not rule out using all means available to Russia if the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity were threatened in accordance with its nuclear doctrine. Quote, Russia, and to another extent China as well, has been very patient, Rasmussen highlighted. They have been measured in their responses to different situations. We need to have a grasp, and President Putin has shown a much more understanding and grasp of where we are in all this situation. The Western leaders really would not accept failure. He says it's scary. They're moving the world to the precipice, to the cliff, and they would rather destroy the world, I think. It's astonishing that we've somehow come to the point with leaders that have very little vision, Rasmussen said. Quote, sometimes I think that they have their nuclear-hardened bunkers for senior decision-makers. I mean, there are facilities that the entire United States Congress and their families will be safe with if we get to a nuclear stage. But they don't care about the actual people. They don't care about their own people. And I read that, and I go, but what if these people are not their own people? The chosen people of the forces of the occupier ruling through democracy, not the organic law. What if the national security was the security of the occupying force over the Lincolnized nation, not we the people in the occupied country? The expert lamented the fact that the Western establishment is trying to silence voices in the United States and Europe which are warning against raising stakes in Ukraine and bringing the ongoing proxy war with Russia to the direct confrontation. As I said, the direct confrontation has already happened in the economic attack, which we've already lost. As a nation, the United States lost already. And you watch what happened. And I don't quite know on the other end of this game whether that was the plan as well. As I said, parity, we talked about a lot about that on the world stage of economics. But Rasmussen particularly referred to the U.S. authorities' decision to seize the passport of former Marine Corps intelligence officer Scott Ritter to prevent him from traveling to Russia. Given all the above, it's hardly surprising that the Western elites are eager to fight to the last Ukrainian in its proxy war against Russia, the expert remarked. But as the occupying power will allow wars fighting to the last American as they are replaced by U.S. citizens, these Title VIII naturalized, not natural inhabitants, is what we're watching in the United States as we look in the carnival mirror of Ukraine. Consider that, if you will. Reading here on, it's, quote, it's almost as if the Western leaders are living in a parallel universe and they couldn't care less. They don't care about the Ukrainian people whatsoever. They don't care about the Ukraine as a country. They do not care. They're purely using it as a tool, and it has not been working. The Ukraine project is a failure, and the current leadership will not accept it, Rasmussen concluded. And I'm asking you to consider that democracy is a weapon, and it's beginning to fail, as long as we start to understand that it is a weapon, and we cannot embrace it. Because that's going to be the future that they want, but more restrictive, more of a weapon against us. We have the black and white law to show it's not supposed to go that way. And I have now the understanding of property law relative to obligation of the government that they do serve that would make this a much more peaceful place. We wouldn't be looking out like we are. We wouldn't be led by a bunch of psychopaths. But to the precipice of nuclear war, the chosen, the very elect, will push us as we sit silent, I guess. The main thrust right now is the threat of the nuclear. Whether they really have the bread button to push, as Putin is looking to see, we don't really know. But they do put that as a pressure to have countries think of. And I said last week, as an ambiguity, that's not peaceful. And those countries are going to protect themselves because of the ambiguity. And again, we hear all that ambiguity is made for democracy. In an occupied territory, as in democracy, there is no right to travel. We heard Scott Ritter's problem. We talked a little bit about it. U.S. Scott Ritter's ban from flying to U.S. complete setup, says a State Department ex-CIA officer. And I do want to highlight just a little bit. Let me get back to it. All these are analysts, CIA analysts, all talking to you. So when do they quit working? Former U.S. Marine Intelligence Officer Scott Ritter's ban from boarding a plane as he was heading to Russia to attend the SPIF was a complete setup by the United States Department of State. A U.S. blogger, political commenter, and former CIA analyst Larry C. Johnson says it was a setup by the State Department. They issued Scott a passport 2 years ago that was not correctly marked. That was the failure of the Biden administration. And let me put it this way. Whether it was intentional at the start or not, I do not know. But they then realized that it did not have the proper markings. And instead of sending him a letter in advance, hey, we made a mistake, let's correct this, they waited until he got to the plane to pull his passport. So it was a complete setup, Johnson said, on the sidelines of the St. Peter's International Economic Forum, the SPIEF. When asked of the comment on Ritter's being forced from the plane and his passport being confiscated. So clearly, we're in a Lincolnized America. We see there is no due process unless you insist on it. So what should have happened in this upon the finding of the error was exactly like he said. The State Department should have gotten back to him. And we are told, Ritter was told 48 hours before his departure. And what they should have done is that 48 hours should have been used to assure him and cause the proper document or an adequate alternative to be delivered to Mr. Ritter at the airport so as not to interfere with his right to travel. But what we see is not evidence of respect for an organic Republican form representative government, constrained by law. What we see is evidence that he enjoyed his civil rights of extortion of every kind by the occupying force that could give two peanuts for your rights. And there should have been no further questions at that point, because as a matter of international law, you knows them when you sees them. They're not following that organic establishment, whatever their excuses are. Even democracy. In fact, that's the red neon sign, the flashing sign, that you can know that you're not dealing with someone who wants to respect anything more than their agenda. Now we found out here Ritter may have some parole restraints on him, so I can't speak to all those, but 21 days prior, he was supposed to, and he did file a notice of his travel plans, and that was plenty of time for the State Department to respond to have Ritter resolve this administratively prior to departure, because as we read, Johnson added that he had personally had no problems flying to Russia and did not anticipate any problems upon his return to the U.S. either, because he had not done anything wrong. So because Ritter had done nothing wrong, the State Department should have bent over backwards to not interfere further with his travel. And this matter, then, is ripe for that habeas I keep talking about. If Ritter is more interested in keeping the Republic than indulging his media celebrity. Even this Johnson is a CIA analyst and doesn't do more than perform his part, it seems to me, as I read these stories. We, the people, must do better, because the government's agents aren't doing any of that. They won't. Nor to participate more in the spectacle of these things than just to be part of the spectacle. And this is the problem. We don't see these people, you would think, have a better line. They're expert. They're taking the oath. They live in this open-air prison. They're suffering the same Lincolnized war of terror, and we don't see more action than commentary, interviews. And I can hear the objections going on. I hear it all the time. Yes, go to the courts of your captor. See, Ritter being denied travel without doing anything wrong would give people the proof that they have no rights if you were all to just start focusing. Don't be afraid to be losing if you're pointing out that we're not getting what we're promised. Your rights are what you gave, or at least tolerated by the government, is not rights. It's not your Republican form representative government constrained by law. It's democracy. It's civil rights. It's extortions of every kind. It's Lincolnized America, now in the war of terror. And these things you bring to the courts, for those that can, when they're done right, it puts a block, if you will, this habeas puts a block in the cell door, providing that example for others on how to begin to keep that republic. The cell door being this open-air prison idea. And don't underestimate as well the diplomatic mission, as we heard already before, of the peace through a freedom to associate, and understand the power of this one sitting in the Constitution, that was thwarted. The very thing the occupiers will not likely and cannot do themselves, as we see, they're looking to make war wherever. They're even willing to threaten a nuclear confrontation. Ritter, or even this CIA analyst with Ritter here together, with their special backgrounds, their oaths of office they could rely on, or by employment if they didn't have an oath of office, ought to have filed the habeas petition immediately. Johnson could have done it for Ritter. Go look at the habeas. This is very powerful stuff. Why don't they do this? These are people who are in the position to be able to do it. They would have filed that immediately, if not sooner. Why? Because you don't have to wait for the administrative process. And as soon as they said that you can't go, you move to the court immediately. You're not going anyway. You could be that example, those of you that can figure this out. These folks shouldn't just complain to the foreign press about this, but the government occupier oppressed them more. That's not even being American either. So we're back to the laughing stock on the other hand of it. And these folks are in the CIA. They got some interesting knowledge, I suppose. So what if our democracy, it doesn't really exist, and it isn't ours? From the "There is no spoon department, Trump and our democracy," What happens when the political system becomes a meme? It's a sign of a deep crisis that the concept of democracy has developed into an ideological tinged narrative, defended with empty and exaggerated rhetoric. Democracy here, though, folks, is a weapon, by definition, at least for the organic American establishment. It didn't turn into an ideological tinged narrative. It has always been an ideological tinged narrative to fill the void left when we, the people, didn't keep the republic and to maintain control of those that didn't keep the republic. It can be maintained by exaggerated rhetoric, even hypocrisy, because it's already a meme that people have bought into. You read parts of these concepts here in the verdict of Donald Trump's hush money trial has bestirred the usual characters in the predictable ways, and never far from anybody's lips is the word democracy. Donald Trump is threatening our democracy. President Joe Biden himself opined, calling the ex-president's questioning of the verdict dangerous. The editorial board of the New York Times lauded the remarkable display of the democratic principles on display in convincing a former president, arguing that this proves that even men as powerful as Trump are not above the law. Another common refrain. But if you reframed that paragraph with the knowledge that democracy is a weapon, you have perceived the truth in these statements. But with the awareness, wielding lawless democracy to bludgeon the people is not a good thing, except for the spin doctor speaking to a captured, preoccupied people. That's who gets affected and responds. Because if they weren't preoccupied, their thoughts were captured by this word, by this concepting, they would have thrown all this off decades ago. And don't think that makes Trump a saint here either, as I move this through. Both sides are not good here. They're both praising something that doesn't actually exist, not relative to America. He'll wield a lawfully repugnant, non-existent, mind-numbing cognitive warfare weapon at every opportunity that he can, this Trump guy. All of them do. Non-existence means formlessness. Perception brings the weapon to bear on oneself here, as I'm looking at what everyone is saying, using the word to bring it into being, to then have people embrace it like it's being violated. And in America, democracy doesn't exist. You're watching magic happen, is actually, and people buying into it like a faith. We read the word democracy is everywhere in the Western world these days. Hardly a day goes by without pleas to defend it, protect it, fight against its sworn enemies, and to celebrate its virtues with pompous cliches. Precise and neutral usage has given way to an ideological tinge that is as electrified as it is vague. Democracy has been imbued with a primitive metaphysical potency that almost seems to stand in for a religious faith. Like its cousin, the rules-based order, it is never quite defined. In the 2024 U.S. presidential election, we are told that democracy itself is on the ballot, whatever that means. Biden's 2023 State of the Union address said, folks, there's one reason why even we've been able to do all these things, our democracy itself. Biden concluded with, democracy, everything is possible. With democracy, everything is possible. Without it, nothing. But turn back the clock a century or so, replace the word democracy with the grace of God, and give the same speech, and nobody would bat an eye. Democracy is a shield against accusations of wrongdoing, defense being mounted against the war crimes charges facing the Israeli leadership is that the country is a democracy, as if how a government elects its leaders somehow changes the laws of war. But what is curious is that the nauseating ubiquity of the word democracy has coincided with the period of deep dysfunction in actual self-proclaimed democracies. The more it is talked about, the less it seems to work, and the larger the chasm between what is proclaimed and what is practiced. Many of the countries most vocally proclaiming democracy are the ones at the forefront of implementing highly undemocratic policies. It would be easy to become carried away pointing out the blatant hypocrisy in the Western embrace of all things democratic, which at the same time leaning hard into authoritarian tendencies. Why? Because the term is a weapon for that authoritarian purpose. It isn't something opposing authoritarianism, but a means to get that intention implemented. But more interesting than simply laying out further instances of double standards and hypocrisy is to seek to grasp what explains the proliferation of democracy as a meme in exact proportion to the decline of the real thing. After all, the word democracy wasn't always on the tip of every politician's lips. Should have been tongue there, I suppose. Offering a framework to think about this phenomenon is the South Korean-German philosopher Nguyen Chul Han in his most recent book called Crisis of Narration. A paradigm becomes a topic only when there is a deep-seated alienation from it, Han argues. All the talk about narratives suggests their dysfunctionality, he says. In other words, the fact that democracy has become a hot topic and that a narrative is being projected about it are themselves signs that something is amiss. There is no need to or such exaggeration or exaggerated talk about narratives, but Han explains the, quote, inflation in the use of such concepts begins precisely when narratives lose their original power, their gravitational force, their secret and magic. He concludes by saying that once they are seen as something constructed, they lose their moment of inner truth. There undoubtedly was a time when the democratic political culture was simply lived rather than constantly defended, attacked, or invoked. What was on the ballot was not democracy itself, but simply whatever batch of politicians had emerged from the democratic process. Prior to our contentious era, Western democracy was lived with the sort of assumed assurance that comes from a worldview that was not yet been shattered. That does not mean that politics didn't have its share of all the usual bickering, backstabbing, sophistry, chicanery, and even outright dysfunction. Read any account of the presidency of Warren Harding to be disabused of that illusion. The term smoke-filled room derives from that era. But what is important is not the relative merits of the politicians of one era or another, but rather the fact that the political life took place within a system that itself was seen as secure and to whose defense society wasn't perpetually being extorted to rush. The cartoonishly inflated reactions to the threats supposedly emanating from Trump and other menacing the temple of democracy is merely a small part of a much larger drama and no less a manifestation of insecurity. What this signifies is the magic has drained out of the current iteration of Western liberal democracy. It will be defended, attacked, idealized, invoked all the same until the simple disappears and is replaced with something else. But properly here framed, not as the article impliedly manifests as proper, in the lawful American democracy never was and shouldn't be. This was never, America was never a democracy. Why, it hardly met the lips. It's a weapon. There shouldn't be an American democracy, well, unless the people believe this aberration is real. Remember, the consent of the governed. And this is the mind control. This is the cognitive warfare. And the people can insist on it. And this is how they slowly change a society. The weapon here soon to be more directly aimed at people will be replaced with something else, the participatory democracy of the sustainable token citizen, abandoning without a whimper the republic they didn't keep. It is our danger today. This was an interesting discussion to read through, but it promotes democracy. It exalts democracy while condemning what the West is doing as a violation to it, as if democracy is what we want, knowing full well the sustainable democracy is right on the horizon to be implemented. By whom? We've been hearing it, as predicted behind the woodshed in the future model for digital taxation from Russia's new prime minister, former tax chief Mikhail Mushtin, what bridges democracy from sea to shining sea, over the pond to sea, extortions of every kind, on and on by every government. And we see during his annual address to the Federal Assembly in late February, Russian President Vladimir Putin proposed to explore the issues of updating the country's fiscal system to provide a more equitable distribution of the tax burden. See, in America, tax burden is extortion, okay? And it's your civil right. It's the same over there. And understand his word fiscal is correct. It's not monetary policy. It's government-established fiscal systems that are tax-based for that purpose. The April Russian finance minister, Anton Silanov, announced plans for a public discussion on the proposal to update the tax system. The minister stressed that the changes would target those with higher personal or corporate incomes, which also pledging to close tax loopholes. The tax reform has been supported by the CEO of the national e-commerce giant Wildberries, Tatiana Bakalchuk, ranked by Forbes to be the richest woman in Russia. The businesswoman said that increasing taxes for big business in Russia will help smaller companies to compete. And when you read the story, is $56,000 the highest earner? Is $56,000 increasing taxes for big business in Russia will help the smaller companies to compete? Or require $56,000 of earning business to shoulder more obligations as a business itself? I mean, this is a very interesting story, what they've kind of twisted through here. They're trying to be a democracy, too. But you'll see what that means, as I've been talking about it here now. Income tax at present in Russia amounts to 13% for majority of Russians, with a 15% rate for earners of an annual income of more than $56,000. The finance ministry proposed to apply a 15% rate for annual incomes ranging from 2.5 million to 5 million rubles. That's $26,900 to $56,000. Oh, so it isn't actually about taxing just business then here either. Apparently, Russians are deemed business just for existing, just like Americans, if you didn't notice, under the existing global financial system that they've established for us. This is just another cover story for increasing extortion, just like Biden and Congress are doing at home at the same time. Again, carnival mirror. We'll see a distorted view. What's going on over there is actually what's happening at home, but distorted. You actually don't see it the same, but it's an analog. But why the tax hikes everywhere, sustainable servitudes aside, is for funding war. The West is hell-bent on provoking Russia into a hot war. For all their circumlocutions, NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg, French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz have effectively green-lighted Kiev using Western weapons for attacks deep inside the Russian Federation. The alleged debate, still ongoing, is just a smokescreen for the real objective, a pretext that could lead World War III. And I hope you're putting my tabs together, the content together today, to see this is where we've been coming, and they've got some of these psychopath lunatics are pushing us there. Even if it's just a bunch of rattling, you don't do it ambiguously, and you leave it to someone else to have to decide whether they're going to have to defend themselves. There's no reason to think Kiev will stick to limited strikes against relatively unimportant targets. Instead, it is likely to target critical security infrastructure in hopes of provoking an unrelenting Russia response, which in turn would pave the way for NATO to invoke Article 5, de facto engage in a hot war. I'm going to go call us back. When I said attacking strategic infrastructure, do you understand what that was meaning? That Ukraine is using American missiles to attack strategic infrastructure. It's not tactical infrastructure. They're attacking the infrastructure that can attack America with American weapons. And I hope you understand the seriousness of that. Richard H. Black, a former U.S. Senator from Virginia, offered a sobering analysis. This is a continuation of the pattern in which the NATO forces recognize they are losing the war in Ukraine, with the fragile lines of defense breaking and NATO's response to escalate. This is not accidental, but very deliberate. It is not the first attack on the Russian nuclear triad. The ideological folks are seeing their world crumbling after flying rainbow flag over conservative countries and waging perpetual wars. They are a frantic and could escalate to nuclear war to get out of the bind. They are taking a series of baby steps in response that they don't do anything in response, and so they keep taking baby steps until one of them lands on a landmine and we are into World War III. Putin is very aware of this disconnect in the West, who keep saying he is just saber-rattling, but he is not. He is informing the West of the dangerous reality. I've been saying this about him and that Russian country ever since they started doing this over there. You better take them at the face value. You better take them at their word. NATO warlike ecstasy is predictably cloaked in cowardice. For all of his rhetoric garbage 24/7 about we don't want war with Russia, the facts point to NATO using Kiev to attack and try to destroy a wide range of Russian military assets. Let me add the word strategic assets as well. The nuclear ones. There's also no denying the U.S. State Department's role in enabling Kiev's terror attacks against Russian civilians in Donbass, Belgorod, and elsewhere. And the State Department is not protecting U.S. journalists or U.S. citizens there as well. Foreign Minister Lavrov, once again displaying his trademark Taoist patience, had to come up with another serious reminder. Russia will regard the deployment of nuclear-capable F-16s in Ukraine, which de facto can only be operated by NATO pilots, as a deliberate signal from NATO in the nuclear field to Russia. And still, the gaggle of armchair Dr. Strangeloves, lavishly rewarded by the rarefied Atlanticist plutocracy holding real power, funds, influence, and mass media control, is not listening. Well, I would say they're listening, but they don't care. Well, they are animals. Care is not in them. I've been experiencing this kind of self-serving deafness for well over a year. It's a sickness. It's a cowardice because these animals run in packs. They do, all they can do is leave destruction in their wake. They're not diplomatic. They're not forward thinking. They're not trying to solve a problem. A world at war is ruled by animals. And then you pay for it, whether blood or treasure, your hard-earned living, your sons and daughters. Russia's telling us a ton of things, and I think we really need to be listening. U.S. leaders pushing for three-front war, they can't handle one. On Monday, in a bipartisan group of U.S. representatives visiting Taiwan against the protests of Beijing, promises Taiwanese lawmakers that U.S.-supplied weapons would be coming soon, and publicly warning China that from invading the island. The saber-rattling of China by the United States is insanity, as it cannot handle the crises it has already facing, retired senior policy analyst Michael Maloof told Sputnik on the Critical Hour on Wednesday. Quote, we don't have the means to fight the one-front war, let alone a three-front war. Right now, we're doing it very poorly. The United States is doing very poorly, just trying to work through a proxy against Russia, Maloof explained. Quote, if you have a direct confrontational approach to war with Russia, then China and Iran, there's no way the United States is going to be able to sustain that. Apparently, he would advocate a war if we did have industrial capacity. But Maloof said, we don't have the industrial capacity right now to fight a war with China. We have to shift our industries, explained Maloof. It would take a considerable amount of time given the sophistication of the weapons we use as opposed to World War II. Maloof explained that the rhetoric coming out of Washington is very dangerous and is very insightful. noting that we didn't believe Russian President Vladimir Putin when he said, "These are my red lines, and we crossed them many times, and he finally acted in Ukraine." Now we're seeing the consequences of that, and I'm afraid we haven't learned any lessons from any of our previous experiences, and we're probably condemned to repeat them again and to a much greater consequences as a result. Now, these psychopathic juvenile delinquents are leading us into war, folks. I don't know how you read this and don't see that. They intend wars to kill your sons and daughters, your wives, your husbands, your mothers, and your fathers. So keep quiet if you agree with that, that they haven't learned their lessons. Yet as I look at this, it's time to take them behind the woodshed, and you got to do it now. There is no way to wait. However we can get the word out is going to be required. Don't know why this exists in the world, but it does. It's not the American way. It's democracy, folks. Democracy is a weapon. It's used to cover all sins. You've been watching and listening how they do that. Very few people understand the organic establishment, and we kind of dismiss a lot of things. Yes, it wasn't perfect, but I suggest to you, as I've explained over and over, there's a handful of things that we can grasp, we can bring down to a foundation. They're tangible. They're clear to understand, making it less esoteric. Granted land law, disposal of land by the government to people, and everything that's involved in that will begin to show us our land, how it's free, how it's not supposed to be interfered with, how we're supposed to be left, how the government is supposed to protect that and us in it, and be focused on that, not making and stirring up a lot of mess for a lot of people to be unstable in their lands, which is an absolute violation anyway, as I think about it. Don't you think? I would hope so. Hope something I said tied a bunch of things together. It's really serious. I'm not thinking doomsday. We still have it in us, I hope, to do. We just have to re-educate ourselves, get ourselves back into practice, and then become organized together. Stop being divided by democracy. It's definitely the weapon that's being used against us. This has been BTWRLM 580, and I'll be with you next week, Tech Diffs, and nature willing.
It goes cold, the hour is near, behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three, Hal's voice flows like thunder, fierce and free. By dose behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, house words ignite, the airwaves burn, stand up, listen, it's time to learn, behind the woodshed, where truths are earned, the law to liberty, the spectrum line, in house court, no place to hide, a can of wood bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst, behind the woodshed.
Next.
next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.